அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி. எல்லாம் செயல்கூடும் என்னான எம்பலத்தே, எல்லாம் வல்லான் தனியே ஏத்து. திருவிளங்க சிவயோக சித்தி எல்லாம் விளங்க, சிவஞான நிலை விளங்க, சிவானுபவம் விளங்க. தெருவிளங்கு திருத்தில்லை திருச்சிற்றம்பலத்தே, திருக்கூத்து விளங்க ஒளி சிறந்த திருவிளக்கே. உருவிளங்க உயிர் விளங்க உணர்ச்சி எது விளங்க, உலகமெல்லாம் விளங்க அருள் உதவு பெறும் தாயாம். மறுவிளங்கு குழல் வள்ளி மகிழ்ந்தொரு பால் விளங்க, வயங்குமணி பொது விளங்க வளர்ந்த சிவக்கொழுந்தே. அன்பினும் பிடியுள் அகப்படும் மலையே, அன்பினும் குடில் புகும் அரசே, அன்பினும் வளைக்குட்படுபரம் பொருளே, அன்பினும் கரத்த மரமுதே, அன்பினும் கடத்துள் அடங்கிடும் கடலே, அன்பினும் உயிர் ஒளிர் அறிவே, அன்பினும் அணுவுள் அமைந்த பேருளியே, அன்புருவாம் பரசிவமே. அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி. லெட் ஆல் லிவிங் பீயிங்ஸ் லிவ் பிளிஸ்ஃபுல்லி. வள்ளலார் யூனிவர்சல் மிஷன் யுஎஸ்ஏ வெல்கம்ஸ் ஆல் த பிரதர்ஸ் அண்ட் சிஸ்டர்ஸ் டு அவர் சண்டே இவெண்ட். Today is April 22nd, 2018. This week is special as it is believed that Valal Perumal wrote Agaval on 21st April, which is on 8th Chittirai. In order to celebrate this occasion, we are having a talk on Arutperum Jyothi Agaval, the Song of Divine Light by our friend Dr. Til Raghu from USA. On behalf of Valalar Universal Mission and its members, we extend our warm welcome to our brother Daivathiru Til Raghu to our Sunday Satvicharam event. Vanakkam, Vandanam, and welcome, sir.
So, do I start or others can introduce themselves? Or?
Yes, sir. We will start after a song by Jay Rush, Mr. Jay Rush.
Okay. Vanakkam, Vandanam, Dr. Ayya.
Thank you.
அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி, அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி. தத்துவம் அனைத்தும் தனித்தனி கடந்தோம், தத்துவாதீத மேல்நிலையில் சித்திகள் முழுதும் தெரிந்தனம் அவை மேல். சிவநிலை தெரிந்திடச் சென்று ஒத்த அந்த நிலைக்கான் யாமும் எம் உணர்வும் ஒழுங்குற கரைந்து போயினும் என்று அத்தையுணர்ந்தோ வலுத்தமின்றோங்கும் அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி என் அரசே. பொது நடம் செய் மலரடி என் தலைமேலே அமைத்தி, புத்தமுதம் அடித்தி என் தும்மை எழாம் பொருத்தி, சதுமறை ஆகமங்கள் எழாம் சாற்றறிய பெரிய தனி தலைமை தந்தையாரே. ஆகாத வரமும் எது நினைத்தே, நினைத்தாங்கே அது புரியும் திறமும் இன்ப அனுபவ நிலையும் என கருளுவதற்கே. திருதருணம் எதிரே நான் என்பதும் முன் கொடுத்தீர், என் புகழ்வேன் என்புடைதும் அன்புருந்தவாறே. அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி, அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி, தனிப்பெரும் கருணை அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி.
Doctor, you can start your talk.
Arupanjodi Taniparam Karunai. Again, I just want to just share some reflections. It's, of course, a very, you know, it's a lifelong process. And actually, perhaps it extends also to more than one lifetime, exploring this great work. I think it's among the greatest, if not the greatest, work of what can be called Enlightenment poetry. That is, we have poetry from various mystics. Of course, in the Tamil tradition, you have Thiruvasagam and so forth, Thirumandiram. You have the songs of the Siddhars. And you have, you know, poetic compositions by many saints like Kabir, Tukaram, Tulsidas, and around from around the world, you know, so forth, St. Francis of Assisi in the Christian tradition. But there is something very unique. I have some acquaintance with the different traditions of what is called religious poetry, but I want to focus more on what I call Enlightenment poetry, that is, the poetry expressed by mystics and they are expressing their realizations, experiences and realizations. And that's the poetry that I'm really interested in. And I have some familiarity with that kind of poetry in different traditions. But I find the Arutperinjodhi Agaval is very unique in its scope, its range, depth of insight, quite unparalleled. I can't really think of anything to compare it with. So I think we are very fortunate that the manuscript survived. And as you know, it was actually, Prasanna, you may this may be an issue to sort out, but the introduction or preface, Munnurai, to the publication of the photocopy of the original manuscript, it says that Vallalar composed it on 18th of April, 1872. So I don't know if this is based on any indications left by Vallalar. I don't see any indications in the manuscript as to the date and time. Page numbers seem to be indicated on top in Vallalar's handwriting, in, of course, Tamil letters. But I don't know on what basis they're saying that it was composed on Thursday, 18th of April, 1872. So you mentioned 21, I'm just presenting this alternative. So it may be something to consider, although certainly it's not a very big issue. But also say, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
So I think we don't have an exact authenticate date. So currently, the people are celebrating on Chitrai 8. That is how they have fixed the date, and which is on 21st, which was yesterday.
So, oh, okay, I understand. Okay, so then that would vary somewhat from year to year.
That's right.
If you by the Chitrai 8th of Chitrai, because that depends on the entry of the sun into Mesham, you know, or the Aries sign, that's the beginning of Chitrai. So that will vary. Okay, I understand. But apparently the original date is the 18th of April, in the English date, you know, that's what I have here. So in 1872, Chitrai Madam Ettam Naal Vyarakarmi would be 18th of April. So just for those who want to follow the English calendar, it's 18th of April, 1872. That's the birth of this, great and wonderful and marvelous work of poetry. But anyway, thank you for the clarification, Prasanna. Now, they say that it was in a notebook. Again, I'm just preliminary information here. The notebook had 58 pages, paper notebook, and the first 47 pages are the Arutperinjodhi Agaval, and the 48th page is blank, and then the 49th through 53rd pages contain Tattuvavatri, the 20 songs of Tattuvavatri, and then 54, 55, and 56 are blank pages, and then the last two pages contain 10 songs, titled Adimai Peru. Any case, that's a little bit of preliminary information. As you know, and you can look at the photocopy of the original, no lines have been corrected or altered. Although Vallalar, of course, using the ink, there's some smudge very rarely, occasionally. And sometimes he has added a word, he may have written, and then I think he just to make the line complete, he has inserted a word, and even that is very rare. So it's a very extraordinary work. The greatness of this work, even in poetic terms, it requires lifelong study or maybe study over several lifetimes. As you all know, the first 12 verses follow the Uyir Ezhuth in Tamil, the life letters. And so forth. That itself is really marvelous. But you will also see that it's, again, astonishing that all verses are rhythmic. Okay? There is no departure from rhythm in any verse. And one of the features of this rhythm is right there in the first word of each line. So, for instance, you take Arut Siva Nerisar, which is followed by Arut Sivapadi, that's the second line. And then you have Agama Mudi, followed by the second line Aga Nindrongiya. Okay? Then you have Iga, Iganilai, Iga, which rhymes with the first letters, two letters of the second line, which is Aga. So Iganilai, then the second line begins Agamara Porundiya. So I think when we read this, we have to accentuate or emphasize. So Iganilai, and then Agamara. And if we accentuate like that, then we will see how wonderfully, marvelously rhythmic. And this goes right till the end. And we are dealing with 788 verses and 1,576 lines. And if this was composed in a short period in one setting, this is astonishing. I can't think of any parallel at all. Even people like Shakespeare, I don't think, rose to the height of this kind of height of, perfection, poetic perfection. So, again, continuing with that, Ina Menriya Parathin Irandin Mer Purlai, then Analin. So, Ina, then Ana, and then followed by Urai Manam, then the second line begins Arai. So, you see, Urai, Arai, and this goes on and on and on and on and on, right? And there is no departure at all from this astonishing rhythmic perfection. So, Sirsabai Naduve Thirunadam Puriyum Adbhuda Marundennum Ananda Marundhe Idaiyurappadatha Iyarkai Vilakkamai Thadaiyondrumilla Thagavudaiyaduvai Maatruvai Enna Madithalapparithai Ootramum Vannamum Orungudaiyaduvai காட்சிக்குரிய நற்கலையுடையதுவாய் ஆட்சிக்குரிய பன் மாட்சியம் உடைத்தார். So this is again, hopefully, the people with considerable poetic abilities, I mean, well, you don't really need, basic intelligence and sense of rhythm is enough to appreciate this, but perhaps those with considerable poetic abilities can bring this out more. So that's one thing also I want to point out. And this rhythmic wonder that is in every verse without any deviation or deficiency is an indication that this is mantric poetry. So you know about mantra. That's a kind of revelation. It comes from a sage. It is uttered in a certain meter. It has a deity, and it's supposed to reveal the deity. Every verse in Aruparinjodhi Agaval is a mantra. And when you recite it with the appropriate emphasis, you can see, again, the rhythmic structure, but it's not just poetry. The words, again, I want to also add, the words have been chosen very, very carefully by Vallalar. And of course, it came from within him with this extraordinary spiritual perception and literary genius that he had. I mean, this is a very unique combination in Vallalar, spiritual genius and literary genius combined, poetic genius. And so that's why I think we should not be deceived by the simplicity of many verses. Some verses, of course, are complex and challenging. That's the very nature of the subject matter. But even simple verses, when you return to them again and again and dwell on them and contemplate them, that's the proper approach. This may be controversial, but as I said, it's mantric poetry. Now, you can recite mantric poetry, like a parrot, or you can really use it as a means for contemplation and meditation. That should be the proper approach. In India, again, some may find this controversial remark, but I have to mention it. In India, we have a tendency to just reduce everything to rote learning and repetition. without really studying something carefully. I may have mentioned this to Sri Karthik also on an earlier occasion. With the Agarwal, it's absolutely important that we take this proper attitude. It's the highest form of mantric poetry. Every verse is like a mantra. And so every verse has to be studied carefully. The nuances of the words have to be examined. And once the meaning is discerned, the mind has to contemplate and meditate on it. You know, and in fact, you can have like a program of meditation on the Agarwal, which goes, I suppose, you know, you can take a verse every day and meditate on it, you know. So that way you'll actually, you know what, I mean, you'd have almost more than 2 years if you go like that each day, if you start with one verse. So, yeah, once again, it's mantric poetry. It should not be recited meaninglessly. It is not like reading some religious scripture. The distinction between religious scripture, which contains, as Vallalar himself has pointed out, all kinds, it contains good things, but it also contains a lot of absurdities and nonsense and so forth. And Agarwal is enlightenment poetry. So what do I mean by that? That means it is the expression of Vallalar's enlightenment. Now, it's not, again, just about Vallalar and Vallalar's enlightenment, of course. It is all about Aruppirunjodhi. Aruppirunjodhi is there right from the beginning throughout this. It's all about Aruppirunjodhi. And the enlightenment poetry of Agarwal should simply be a means to inspire us to realizing Aruppirunjodhi. That is why I believe Vallalar composed this, in order to help people, not to, you know, just recite it like a parrot without understanding what it means, but to really live in it. So dwelling on it every day, verse by verse, you know, going back to this verse or that verse. And here again, I would make the suggestion, which needs to be developed. Of course, I only have some suggestions. Life issues, life problems, and so forth. We can come back to the Agarwal and look at the relevant lines to help us to deal with those problems. And this is not just life issues, but also mental states. So if you feel tired, for instance, you feel exhausted, reflect on this verse. Ukkamum unarchiyum olidarum akkayum akkamum aruliya Aruppirunjodhi. And I remember going back to my graduate student days when I was not feeling well. I used to recite the verses that represent Aruppirunjodhi as marundu, you know. We ending with that wonderful word, Sitsabai naduve thirunadam puriyum appuda marundannum ananda marunde, you know. So this is something you have to live the Agarwal. That's the way I feel about it. You have to live it. It's not just simply reciting it on some days and so forth, which is good and can be helpful to many people. But you have to live it every day. When issues come up, when the mind is upset, you're confused about something, doubts arise, then go back to the Agarwal and look at the relevant verses. That's, I think, the best approach. And again, once again, the risk of repeating myself and boring all of you to death, I would say it is mantric poetry. You know, it's poetry as mantra. Every verse is like a mantra. And of course, Aruppirunjodhi is the deity. Vallalar is the rishi. And every verse reveals something about Aruppirunjodhi. So that is the supreme goal. You know, again, we don't want to turn this into another religious scripture to be just simply repeated without understanding both its literary and spiritual greatness. And of course, it has to be the subject of Satvicharam. We have to ask questions, what does this mean? What does that mean? And so forth. And again, even scratching the surface like a small kid, you know, that's how I feel. Every word in this Agarwal is in its proper place. And it conveys what Vallalar meant to convey, conveys Vallalar's vision, Vallalar's realization. Every word. There is no, that's why I said it's an extraordinary document, extraordinary poetry. I can't think of anything to compare, you know, even with what little that I know. So we have to bear that in mind. You know, again, I want to give another example here. A couple of weeks ago, Mr. Prasanna and Karthik, we were, three of us were discussing one verse, which is right at the beginning, which is Enamin. ஈனமின்று இகப்பரத்தின் மேற்பொருளாய் ஆனல் என்றோங்கி அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி. So the question was, ஆனல், you know, what does that mean? Of course, it means without deficiency, without lack, without gaps. But I also found that it also has the meaning of raft or some kind of means. You see, raft or means, it's used for instance, the bull on which Shiva is riding. So it's some kind of means. And what this verse means, when you consider that aspect of the word anal, eenamindru igapparathirandin meel purula, yeah, without any kind of incompleteness or deficiency, it is the reality that transcends. It is beyond this igam, this world, this universe, and param, the other universe or the other world, both this and the other world or the other universe, beyond this universe, arupirunjodi goes beyond both as the purul reality without an ongiya arupirunjodi. Analin Rongi Arutparanjodi, without any deficiency, Arutparanjodi expands. And I mentioned how this word Ongudal is used by Vallalar. You know, Arutparanjodi is a dynamic reality. It's not static. So it exceeds and expands. But Anal, with this new connotation of means, in this context means Analindra. That means without any means or support, Arutpurunjodi goes beyond the igam and param and is the ultimate reality, you know, purul. So, not only does anal refer to analindri means without any deficiency, without incompleteness, but also without any support. Arutpurunjodi doesn't need any support. It is self-existent. So, these are things that come up when some word, you know, you're not clear what it means, and then you go back and you reflect on the different connotations to come up with the best interpretation of the meaning. And this, of course, you know, it's a process of lifelong learning, you know. And so that I want to use that again as an illustration of my point that every word has its place, its power, and its significance or meaning. It is a revelation. You know, everything there in the Agabal reveals something about Arutpurunjodi. And it is our great good fortune that the manuscript survived, and we are able now, you know, what is it, about, you know, more than two centuries, 1872, more than a century, and so forth, almost a century and a half, so to speak, in 4 years. This is our good fortune that we can go over this, you know. So again, the mantric poetry aspect, the enlightenment poetry. It is mantric poetry. It is enlightenment poetry. Every word is in its proper place. Every word reveals something, and each verse has the power to enlighten us about some difficulty or the other we may run into, or if we find ourselves in these negative mental states, you know, anxiety, fear, and so forth, you know, frustration, whatever. there are all verses in the Agavo that can help us if we study them and reflect them when we run into these problems or issues. Are there any questions at this stage before I move on? Again, this is all very introductory, but if anyone has question or comment, that'd be a good idea, Prasanna, to take any question or comment now.
Sure, Doctor.
Okay, yeah. And if someone has a comment or question that will contribute to better understanding, please go ahead, and then we can move on to some other things that I want to point out. Again, I mean, I've thought about this basically as an introduction to certain things about the Agavo. And, you know, subject to Allah's grace in perhaps future sessions, certain verses can be taken up and explored in.
Sure. Hello. Does anyone has any question or comment?
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear
yes.
you.
Would you please introduce
hi.
Yourself?
Yes, my name is Stacy. I'm calling from New York and very grateful for your doing this broadcast. I'm learning a lot. However, I came into the broadcast unfortunately a little late, and I just wondered, this book you're speaking of, is it available in English, and where can I get it?
I don't know if it is still in print, but there was an English translation by Swami Saravanananda, one of the great teachers in the Sutta Sanmargam tradition. He passed away several years ago, and I had the good fortune to have a phone conversation with him some months before he passed away. Last summer, I was there in Tamil Nadu, South India, and I visited his samadhi and met with a relative of his and actually went to the house where he lived and so forth. There was an English translation that was published. I think the first edition came out in 1989. I suspect that it is out of print. I wouldn't call it exhaustive or very deep, but it's a good introduction. So that's one thing. But I'm also at work on translation and commentary, and I have a blog, the Sutta Sanmargam, the Way of Pure and True Theism, and I do intend to publish some translations and some commentaries, as the work unfolds. So right
and
now,
how can we see your work online? What's your blog address?
If you type Sudha Sanmargam, that's Suddha, San as in Nancy, M as in Mary, Argam. So these are two different words. And then you put a plus sign, Google, and you type the Way of Pure and True Theism, then you'll get to my blog. But in any case, the short answer to your question is there was one, but I think it's out of print now.
Stacy, this is Prasanna here. I can touch base with you offline and provide you some information.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Doctor. This is Raji from USA, Philadelphia.
Yeah, hello, Raji.
Good morning, Doctor. Nice introduction about the divine light of Arpan Jyoti Agarwal. It's a very nice introduction. You said about that it's not just a poem, poetry. It's like each word should be a mantra. It is like a mantra. So everyone has to realize the Arpan Jyoti through this wonderful poetry. That's really nice introduction about the Agarwal. I want to tell about that.
Thank you. I mean, again, I'm just, again, I don't want to convey any, misleading impressions. As I've said many times to Prasanna and Karthik, I'm just a student of this great text, and I often feel I'm just scratching the surface. And I think this is not false modesty or humility or anything like that. I think that's accurate. So I'm just sharing some, some ideas and making some suggestions, and hopefully they'll have some value.
Thanks a lot. We are very eager to hear the rest of the things about Agavul.
Yes. So any other comments or questions?
Dr. Tal.
Thank you, Doctor. It is Agavul is specifically mentioned. It is extraordinary monthly enlightenment poetry. It's very interesting, Doctor. Thank you so much.
Yes, if you read Aurobindo, he talks, I think, in his book, The Future Poetry, he talks about how poetry can, and his own great work of poetry, Savitri, tries to do this. But I think he was not aware of Ramalingam's work. Although Sudhananda Bharati was acquainted with him, not Bharatiyar, but Bharati, and might have even told him something about Ramalingam. In one letter, Aurobindo refers to a yogi in these parts who had realization of divine light and so forth. That may well be Ramalingam or Vallalar. But, you know, he didn't know about Vallalar's work. And Vallalar's Agavul is actually, the summit of mantric poetry. You know, the poetry where every line, when you recite it, resonates like a mantra, you know. This is already accomplished by Vallalar. Very interesting. Vallalar wrote this, composed this in 1872, and that was actually the birth year of Aurobindo. But in any case, yeah, let's just focus on Vallalar.
This is Karthik.
Yes.
Yeah. I would request at this point in time that, you know, you please contribute to the Suddha Sanmarkam by translating the entire Agavul in English, which will add some value for the benefit of the English-speaking community.
Yes, I want to do that in stages. Just as now I've started with the letters of Ramalingam, you may have seen the translation and some comment on the very first letter that's available to us, written in 1858 when Vallalar was 35 years old, to Irukkam Ratina Mudaliyar. And there's a lot in these letters, you know, that can remove misunderstandings. So you can, you know, look forward to that too. But I hope to publish something on some central verses and some important aspects of the Agavul, you know, in the future. Thank you again for your interest and encouragement.
Maybe the entire Agavul would be, if it is get translated, that would be great.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Doctor, I think we can proceed.
Okay, so we also, I think I also want to point out, and those of you who are familiar with the Tamil, that the first 12 verses follow the, you know, the Tamil vowels, you know, and you have and so forth. And that's also very extraordinary because the way he does it is, again, there are really no departures from the rhythmic beauty and precision. So, again, I want to just read these 12 verses here. Arut Siva Nerisar, Arut Peru Nilaiwar, Arut Siva Padiyam, Arut Perunjodi. So, is the first letter there in Tamil. Then so it's so Agama Mudimel, Arana Mudimel, Aga Nindra Ongi Arat Purunjodi. Notice that the second verse begins, both lines of the second verse begin with and both lines of the first verse begin with And notice the and See, you find this and Vallalar keeps coming back to this, and the way he does it and the way he comes up with the words, the suitable words, the appropriate words with, which begin either with or I mean, it's just you know, remarkable. And let us remember that although Vallalar was a prodigy, and he was a poetic prodigy too, and a speaker and so forth in Tamil, as you know, he gave discourses in his early teens, but he didn't have any formal education. So this is extraordinary self-education, how he acquired such mastery of the Tamil language without any formal education. Of course, he did meet with many poets and scholars and so forth, and with his extraordinarily keen intelligence, power of assimilation, he must have drawn a lot. But still, you know, it's an extraordinary achievement that he sticks to these patterns with complete perfection. So as I said, Ah is the first Weirirth, and you see in the first verse, Arut Sivanarisar, Arut Perunilevar, Arut Sivapadiyam, Arut Perunjodi. Then he moves to Ah, the second vowel, the second letter. Agama Mudimel, Arana Mudimel, Aganindra Ongi Arut Perunjodi. So see, Agama Mudimel, Arana Mudimel, Aganindra Ongi. I mean, it just simply, I mean, at least for me, it's just simply spellbinding. Then you go to E, and he says, Iganilai Porulai, Paranilai Porulai, then Agamara Purundi Arut Purunjodi. But notice again the rhythmic thing, Iganilai, and then Agamara, you know, and then E, and then E, the fourth vowel or alphabet, Inamindra Igaparatandin made Purulai, Analindrongia Arut Purunjodi. Then comes the fifth vowel or alphabet, U, Urei Manang Karanda Oru Peru Valimel, Arai Suseidongu Marut Purunjodi. Then U, the sixth, Ukamum Unarchiyam, Olidarum Akkayam, Akkamum Aruliya Arut Purunjodi. Ukamum Akkamum. Then the seventh, A, Ellayil Pirappenum Irungadal Kadathi and Allalai Niki Arut Purunjodi. Then A, the eighth vowel or alphabet, Era Nilaimisai Etri Endanake. Notice, Era Nilaimisai Etri Endanake. Ara Aru Kakti Arut Purunjodi. Era, Ara. Then Ayamum Tiribum Arutena Dudambinul Ayamum Niki Arut Purunjodi. That's the ninth vowel or alphabet. And then the tenth is Wundrena Irandana, Wundrirandana. So you see, oh, comes twice, ஒன்றென இரண்டென ஒன்றிரண்டென இவை அன்றென விளங்கிய அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி ஒன்றென அன்றென. Then the 11th alphabet or vowel, ஓதாது ஓ. Now, so we have the 10th one is ஓ, and then the 11th is ஓ. ஓதாது உணர்ந்திட ஒலி அளித்தெனக்கே ஆதாரமாகிய அருட்பெருஞ்சோதி. So see, ஓதா ஆதா, these are the again the infallible rhythmic achievement of Vallalar. And then finally, Au, the 12th, you know, the alphabet vowel. Avviyam Adi or Arun Tavirtha Per Avviyal Vartham Arut Purunjodi. Avviyam Avviyam. So, and I suspect this is something that, you know, I'm studying, but I suspect there are other things in the way Vallalar has composed it that are going to yield some very valuable insights into the Tamil language, as well as Tamil, you know, semantics, as well as grammar. I suspect that, you know, intuitively I feel that there's a lot there that would come from a very careful study. Now, we notice also that, we should notice that the first 874 lines end with the word Arut Perunjodi, which means immense light or immense light of grace. Arul is grace, which is, as Vallalar has explained, divine compassion. And Perum is immense, and Jodi is light. So it's basically immense light of compassion. he uses this invocation. It all ends with this refrain, Arusparanjodi, Arusparanjodi, for about 874 lines, and you can kind of divide it into the verses, you know, and you will see that it's going to be about 437 or so verses. He uses Arutparanjodi. It all ends with Arutparanjodi. Of course, the whole work is about Arutparanjodi or ultimate reality. This is, again, as I said, enlightenment poetry. It reveals the nature of ultimate reality. And there are so many aspects and dimensions to this work, which is why I say that it's an extraordinary work. I can't think of anything comparable. I pointed out that the first 874 or, 437 verses end with Arutparanjodi. What happens to the rest? So you start with the with line 875, and you go to about 1,555. As you know, the whole work consists of 1,596 lines. This 875 to 1,555, these about 680 lines, these bring in various other terms of description. And each one, again, is extraordinarily rich. And I've come up, maybe I hope I've not left anything out, but I came up with 96 descriptions or names or actually terms that Vallalar uses. Refer to Arutparanjodi, but he's not using the word Arutparanjodi, but he is using these other terms of designation. So, as I said, about 96, let me just go through that list here. So we start with Wundru. That is, again, I'm going to, you know, I have to shift back and forth between these different things that I have. So Wundru, that would be starting on the 875, line 875. And let me see the page number here. Yes, that starts with Ondre. So this is an extraordinary play on the word Ondru, which means one. The revelation or the idea that's being conveyed here about the nature of Arutparanjodi is that it is one. And this indivisible unity is the term that he uses here by Wundru. And he uses one, two, three verses, all playing on Wundru. So even if you are not very familiar with Tamil, at least if you hear the sound, you know, Wundradirandadu, Wundrinirandadu, Wundrinilondradu, Wundrinum Wundre, Wundrala, Irandala, Wundrinirandala, Wundrinil Wundrala, Wundrinum Wundre. And then, Wundrinul, Wundrula, Wundrinil, Wundrila, Wundara, Wundriya, Wundranam, Wundre. I mean, just these three verses would qualify, would be sufficient to make Vallala one of the great, if not the one of the great, or among the greatest poets of the Tamil language, or even any kind of enlightenment poetry, because he just, you know, reiterates this concept of the oneness of the ultimate reality in these three verses, all playing again and again on that word. But every time he is using that word, it means something else. So these are some things that we really have to gain appreciation for. And that's why I'm saying, you know, I mean, people that repeat the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas and so forth, you know, and we don't want to reduce the appreciation of Agarwal to that sort of thing. You know, it's not about repetition. It's really about understanding and enjoyment and experience. Because it is, after all, like a signpost. The entire Agarwal is a signpost to the ultimate reality. And we don't want to be in the position of those who just simply admire the signpost and do, you know, analysis of the signpost without actually walking in the direction of the signpost. Then he uses porul, which in Tamil means reality, but it also means valuable resource. Porul illarki ulagam illai, arul illarka ulagam illai, as we know from Thirukkural, which is a great compendium of Tamil ethics and moral thought. Porul is also valuable resource. Then he refers to Aruparanjyoti as porul. And, you know, he starts, I don't want to go through all of the verses here, we don't have time, but Kalangam Neetu Ulagam Kalipura Meinari Vilanga Ennulle Vilangum Meipurule. Something that this is the reality which removes impurities and deficiencies over time. It removes deficiencies.
Hello?
Yes, it removes. So was there an interruption?
No, Doctor, it is okay.
Okay, yeah. Kalanga neetulagam kalipura. That means removing the impurities. Kalangam is defective, deficiency, impurity. It removes. And then ulagam kalipura, which is so that the beings can experience bliss, delight, bliss. Mainari vilanga, that is, Mainari is the path of Siddha Sanmargam. This is the way of true and pure theism. Ennulle vilangum meipurule. It manifests and illuminates itself as the reality within Valalar's consciousness and, of course, everyone's consciousness. I want to also point out that this Valalar has dealt with this in other verses, but it's very important to notice I have in the past try to pull together different stance of thought here. I pointed out how Valalar emphasizes scientific inquiry, anda vicharam and pinda vicharam. So Sutta Sanmargam is not a religion, you know, some kind of anti-scientific creationist dogma and so forth. We've got nothing to do with those kinds of things. This is a path of inquiry, a path of understanding, a path of conduct. It has all of those aspects of the Sanmarga, and it does not exclude any knowledge of reality. So whatever limited knowledge, fragmentary knowledge science can provide, we take that into account in order to improve, in order to increase our understanding of the workings of Aruparanjyoti. So when he says Kalangab Neetu, I want to just point out here that, you know, there's this whole doctrine of natural selection in evolutionary science. That is, if organisms have characteristics as a result of whatever changes might happen genetically, and the bodies are not suited for the environment, those traits will be wiped out eventually. And those traits that help the organisms to survive and reproduce will eventually become established. And that's a process of purification. You can see this actually as an activity of intelligence, which just as, for instance, when we undertake any task, we select, you know, and we improve. We clear out imperfections, and we make something better and better.
We are experiencing technical difficulties. You may not hear everyone on the call. You will be prompted when the conference is reconnected.
He says, ulagam kalipura. And again, I don't want to, let me again go back to what I was saying about scientific inquiry. So what I just said is...
This conference has been reconnected.
Now, in Sutta Sanmargam on this path...
We are experiencing
this
technical
conference
difficulties.
Has been reconnected.
You may not hear everyone on the call. You will be prompted when the conference is reconnected.
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah. How are we? Yeah, I think it kind of faded out. I hope everyone else is on the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so science is part of it. Scientific inquiry is not disparaged, or we don't, you know, neglect scientific inquiry in Sutta Sanmargam. But also this aspect of kalipu, delight, that includes artistic delight. It includes joy. Suddha Sanmargam is a path of joy. It's not a joy-killing religion where you're going around with a dour and sour expression all the time, you know, worrying about doomsday and eternal damnation and so on and so forth. This is not, it has no place in Suddha Sanmargam. Kalaivaru Alitthu Kalippura Kalippura Virgalam Thiruttu Maruparin Jodi, something to that effect. I don't remember exact verse. Kalai Arivalitthu, that is, Aruparanjodhi has endowed us with aesthetic sense. In order for us to enjoy, take delight, experience joy in the manifold, the beautiful phenomena of nature. So art also, this is my point, not only science, but art also is an integral part of Suddha Sanmargam. There is the knowledge aspect that's covered by science, and then there is the kalupu, joy, delight aspect covered by the arts. So we would be completely, and Kalippu, as you know, most of you have read this great work, Kalippu occurs many times in the Agavo. And so Vallanar's path includes science and art. You know, it's not path of hostility towards, and then, you know, as you know, I mean, I'm going to come to that eventually. There are metaphors that Vallalar uses, striking metaphors and terms that he refers to Aruparanjodhi, terms that refer to Aruparanjodhi, paattu, isai, paattu, eedam. That's music, melody, song, tune. So, this is, again, an extraordinary vision articulated in the 19th century by this, you know, extraordinary figure. Of course, we don't want to end up in some kind of cult worship of Vallalar. That's not, I mean, that he himself discouraged it. That's why he forbade photographs and people trying to make a statue of him or a bust of him and so forth. And he even lamented and lamented that people were trying to surround him rather than follow the teachings. And he was very uncompromising on this. He, in fact, closed the sabai, Jnana sabai, and kept the keys. And he said, "You're not following the teachings. You do not belong to this path." He was very straightforward about this. So, very uncompromising perspective. And, you know, we don't want to make him into some kind of, you know, put him on this, you know, make him into some kind of Jesus or Muhammad and all that kind of stuff and, you know, put him on a pedestal and worship him and so forth. No, he's a great guide. And in his own words, the point is to realize Aruparanjodhi. That's why he composed this work. That's why he did the petitions. And you can see even in the petitions, Vinapangal, he is taking the role of the common person, although he does, you know, express his own experiences and insights. For the most part, he is taking the perspective of a common person in order for the common person to read and understand and enter into the spirit of the Vinapams. So in any case, back again to this point about how this is not some kind of joy-killing, damnation-obsessed, punishment-obsessed path. There is no question of any kind of punishment here, you know, other than the consequences of violating certain laws, with natural laws and spiritual laws. So if we violate the natural laws, we're going to have the appropriate consequences. If we violate spiritual laws, the foremost being the law of compassion, then we're going to have sufferings. Aruparanjodhi is not some punitive judge in this conception. That's a kind of anthropomorphic conception. That is, you know, you just turn your concept of you turn the god of your conception into some kind of judge and punisher and all that kind of stuff. This has nothing to do with all of that stuff. I think this should be very clear, especially, you know, if you're joining the session for the first time. This has nothing to do with any kind of punitive, joy-killing, vengeance-filled approach. Yes, completely. It has no place at all. Nor is it irrationally anti-scientific or anti-art. No, science and art are fully embraced in this path. So all of this you see all over the Agavam. So what I'm saying is not just my own, projection. It's there in so many verses. And hopefully in future sessions, I'll be able to draw your attention to more of those verses. But he says Puru reality, then he uses Param, which is the transcendent, then Padam, which is abode, Gadi, destination, Padi, Lord, and so forth. So there are about 96 that he uses. What's interesting about this, again, I'm only going to select a few. So there are, as you know, verses which refer to Aruparanjodhi as Guru, the teacher. So on this path, Aruparanjodhi is the teacher. There are no priests, there are no alleged incarnations and so forth. Vallalar never said he was an incarnation or anything like that. There's nothing of that sort. The divine, the ultimate reality, the supreme being is the only guide and guru. The verses that refer, I think about from 943, line 943 to about 1018, that refer to Sivam. Those are interesting lines here because there's always been a controversy over Saivism and Vallalar. So you still have people claiming that Vallalar was a Saivite. You see portraits of him or alleged portraits with the holy ash on his forehead and so forth. I suppose they can quote verses or songs or poems of Vallalar which employs the term Sivam. But even in the letters, and I can get to that later, it's very important to ask, what did Vallalar mean by Sivam? And Prasanna also pointed this out in an earlier conversation. Sivam and Sivan must be distinguished, although Sivan also has the attribute of Sivam. But the attribute of Sivam is the critical one. And that is pure intelligence. So all these songs in which Vallalar uses Sivam, he's talking about pure intelligence, which is an essential attribute of the ultimate reality, Aruparanjodhi. He's not talking about Lord Shiva of Hindu mythology, of the Purana, Saiva Purana, and so forth, and Saivism as one of the religious paths. They worship the Sivalingam, they worship the dancing Shiva in Chidambaram, and so forth. That is not what Vallalar has in mind, or even if he does refer to in some of his songs to this kind of representation, anthropomorphic representation, because hands, legs, and so forth. Sivam does not have hands and legs. But even if he's using something like that, he actually means pure intelligence. So Tirunadam is not talking about the dancing Shiva in the literal sense. Tirunadam is the cosmic dance, which even Saivites also, many of them will acknowledge that that's not a physical dance with legs and so forth. It's cosmic dance. Cosmic dance has to be understood in terms of the functions of Aruparanjodhi, which is to bring something into existence, to preserve it, to develop it. There is also the function of veiling and then unveiling. Which are very interesting functions. And essentially all of that really captures the five basic powers of consciousness, which are creation, preservation, destruction, obscuration, and revelation. I've asked some people working in cognitive science, I posed this question, can you give me an example of something that does not fall under one of these categories of powers of consciousness? That is creative, protective, preservative, destructive, obscuring, and then revealing. And nobody was able to come up with any example that doesn't fit into one or more of these categories. So these are five basic powers of consciousness, and they are also attributes of Arup Parinjodhi and various supernatural beings or supernature beings in supernature and so forth that Vallalar mentions in the Agavul. You know, when we talk about Sivam, we have to think in terms of pure intelligence and its functions, like the fivefold function that I just mentioned. It is not Sivalingam. It is not the Sivan with the snake in the head and half moon and all that kind of stuff. That's all just mythological stuff. Vallalar does not accept that as real. This we have to make clear to everybody. Vallalar does not accept mythology as real. He certainly would acknowledge that it has some functions, you know, in inspiring poetry and all that kind of thing, but he does not believe that there is actually a being with long hair and snake in the head and who's dancing. And when he uses the word Sivan, Sivam, he does not, is not talking about this particular figure in Hindu mythology. He is talking about pure intelligence. Peace, pure intelligence, and so forth, these are all part of the meaning of the word Sivam. Then Sivapadi also is used, which is again a combination of Sivam and Padi. This is in the lines 1020 to 1039. And I suppose, you know, if somebody wants to say, oh, he's used the word Sivam and he's saying Sivapadi, so how can you say that he's not Saivite or that he's rejected Saivism? Well, again, that's the misunderstanding of what the words mean. You have to understand it in terms of what Vallalar means by Sivam and Sivapadi. And he is not talking about the Sivan of Saivism and Hindu mythology. So I, that should resolve the question of Vallalar, you know, being a Saivite and so forth. You know, even in the period before the Agavul and so forth, when he was using these terms and composing poetry and so on, again, we have to understand what he means by Sivam. Even in one of the letters, you know, earliest letters, it's very clear. He mentions Jiva Karniyam and Siva Sindhanam. But again, what does he understand by Sivam? He, some people give this instance, and I'm going to discuss it in my posts on Vallalar's letters. One of the letters to Irukkum Ratina Mudaliyar, one of the early ones, he mentions, he recommends to Irukkum Ratina Mudaliyar that he should chant the Panchaksharam, that is Om Namah Shivaya. So, you know, we can say, well, why, you know, Vallalar has prescribed Om Namah Shivaya, and then he says in the Vinnappam that even from his early stages, Arup Parinjodhi prevented him from getting entangled in all the orthodoxies and rituals and all that of these religions, including Saivam. So how are these two consistent? When Vallalar in the letter says to Irukkum Ratina Mudaliyar, you know, he says, okay, he says, in the Manida Piravi Yedutthadu Sivathin Thiruvarulai Paruvatharkke. We've taken this birth in order to obtain the grace of Siva. Evvagai prayasathinalavathu and the arulai araya vendum and the aru, see, notice that in Sivathin Thiruvarulai Paruvatharkke, it's again talking about the grace of that pure intelligence. Evvagai prayasathinalavathu and the arulai araya vendum. This is in 1858. This letter, 1858, Vallalar was 35 years old. And he's making it very clear that what he has in mind is Arul. And the Arul evvagayal varum endral, ella uyirgalathilum dayavum, back again to Jivakaranyam, ella uyirgal, that's very important to take note of. It's not just human beings, although predominantly human beings, but not exclusively human beings. It includes plants, caring for plants and trees and animals. Prapanjathil viruppum, which I think simply means you don't get entangled with the prapanjam or the world. You know, you have detachment. And sivathinidathil anbum maradu. So sivam again, what does he mean by sivam? It's very clear. He's talking about grace of pure intelligence. Namidathirundal avarul nammai adayam. Namum adhanai adayindu edhuratra sugathil iruppom. And you may recall edhuratra occurs also in the Agaval. Idu satyam. Ini mekuritha sadhanathai naam peruvadarku siva panchakshara dhyaname mukhya karanamaga irukkirathu. Agalil idaividaadu nalla manathodu adhanai dhyanikka vendum. Now of course this is the pre-enlightenment phase of Vallalar. But what he is just prescribing to Irukkam Ratna Mudaliyar is simply a means to focus his mind on the pure intelligence, Sivam, and its grace. That is all. He is not prescribing to Irukkam Ratna Mudaliyar all the different rituals and all the different practices of Saivism and all that. I mean, if he was a Saivite, if he was that kind of traditional Saivite, he would have prescribed all that to Irukkam Ratna Mudaliyar. Instead, he just goes to the heart of the matter, you know, which is not anything pertaining to all the different rituals and all of these things that are prescribed in Saivism. So, again, when we look at the Agaval Sivam, Sivame and Sivapadiye, we have to understand it in terms of the root meaning of Sivam, which includes goodness, prosperity, auspiciousness, liberation, final liberation, and most importantly, even in Saivism, it's the highest state of ultimate reality, the highest attribute of ultimate reality, which is pure intelligence. So we always have to understand by Sivam this pure intelligence. This also ties in with Vallalar's verses on Sith or Chit. In the Indian Vedanta, Chit is pure consciousness. And, you know, I'll touch on that later. But those verses on Sat, Chit, and instead of Ananda, of course, the Tamil word is Inbam. There are verses by Vallalar on Sat, Aruparinjodhi as Sat, Aruparinjodhi as Sit, or Chit, pure consciousness, pure existence, and then Inbam, which is pure bliss. You know, so we have to keep these things in mind and look actually at the philosophical meanings of the words Vallalar uses in order to make sure that we don't misunderstand what he's saying. He is not talking about any Saiva mythology or anything like that. So then again, there's the impersonal terminology or impersonal terms. So reality, the one, pure intelligence, and so forth. But then there are also these personal aspects. And that's why I'm saying that the Agaval is such an integral work. And it conveys to us that Vallalar's enlightenment was integral. It was complete. Not only the impersonal aspects emphasized in the verse. Hello?
Doctor, please go ahead.
Yeah, but the personal aspects too, because someone can say, okay, it is Paratan Mer Param and all that, so what does it have to do with me, a poor mortal that's struggling in this world? Well, already we see Guru. Aruparinjodhi is Guru, is the teacher, is the supreme teacher. Then he brings in other personal relation concepts like Thai, mother, and Tandai, father. And then Tunai, guard or companion. Natpu, friend. Uravu, kin or relation. So the personal relation is also preserved. So Aruparinjodhi is not only to be contemplated as something transcendent, utterly transcendent, The transcendental aspect has been emphasized in some religions, you know, like Judaism and so forth. But in the Christian tradition, you have personal things, which is all, again, mixed up with a lot of other stuff, which is far from desirable. But in Valalars Agarwal, you only have the pure stuff without any kind of defilement or corruption. So the longing to have these kinds of relations, that of a student to a teacher, that of a son to the mother or father, to a companion, to a friend, to a kin or relation, all of these relations can be had with Arutpuran Jyothi. And in fact, Arutpuran Jyothi, relates also in these forms to the person who is sincerely and completely turned towards it, or, you know, I don't want to use the word him or her, towards that being. So we have to bear that in mind. The personal aspects are also covered, and then again, explore the wonders and the nuances of all of these sets of verses, in your entire lifetime, or even more than that. I mentioned the Vedantic concept. As you know, Brahman is conceived in terms of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. And Valalar always begins his appeals to Arutpuran Jyothi. If you look at the Vinnapangal, he is always starting the Vinnapangal with actually the reference to this Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Except that instead of the word Ananda, he uses Inbam, the Tamil word Inbam. So the very first petition, he starts by saying, Iyarkai Unmayarendrum, that is inherent truth or reality. Iyarkai Arivinarendrum, inherent intelligence. Iyarkai Inbinarendrum, inherent bliss. That's the first Vinnapam. Then if you move on to the second Vinnapam, again he begins with Iyarkai Unmai, inherent reality, inherent truth. Niraivagi Ulla Or Sutta Sivanubhava Veliyil Iyarkai Vilakka Niraivagi Vilangiya. That refers to the chit aspect, consciousness. Arutpuran Jyothi Swarooparai Iyarkai Inba Niraivagi Ongiya Subhananda Orumai Thiru Narasega. Iyarkai Inbam again is inherent bliss, inherent absolute bliss. And that bliss is expressing itself in all of these actions and events and so forth in order to bring about the happiness of all living beings. Of course, immediately the problem arises, the problem of suffering, the problem of evil. And I think that requires a separate session. But Valalar appeals to three things. To shed light on why there is pain, why there is suffering, and so forth. Evil is the result of ignorance. Also Valalar's emphasis on Sudandaram, which is basically something like free will. It's very clear that the soul has free will. It doesn't have absolute free will, but it has limited free will, and then it can make choices, and it'll have to undergo the consequences of those choices. This is like a divine law. So Arutpuran Jyothi cannot prevent or destroy this inherent attribute of the individual self of making choices. Okay? Now, anyway, coming back to the point about how he accounts for suffering and pain or suffering, he mentions karma in the Jivakarmya Workam, and Vinaya also recurs in the Agavam. These are the consequences of choices that we have made, either in this life or in a previous life. If we can't find anything in this life, although there will always be contributing causes, it goes back to previous life. Valalar accepts and affirms the reality of reincarnation, and he gives a wonderful analogy, how would to explain how karma follows the soul from one life to another? So you're in a house and you make acquaintances, with the wrong kinds of people. If you shift from that house and you go to another house, the same acquaintances will come there to your new place, you see. So in just the same way, when the soul shifts its body and goes to another body, all these acquaintances that it has cultivated, including the effects of its tendencies, will come in the new body, and it goes on and on, unless until it reaches a point where it says, enough, you know, I want to be liberated from this. So karma plays a role, but it's not all karma, because Vallada also mentions ajakrade. Ajakrade means the lack of vigilance or mindfulness. So if you are careless about handling fire and you get burned, very simple explanation as far as Vallada is concerned, you were negligent. And what underlies this is the fact that there are natural laws, you see. There are things, everything has its nature. So you go to a snake and you want to just play with this poisonous snake, good luck. It's going to, bite you, and you're going to suffer from the effects of its poison. A snake bite is different from a cat or dog licking you or something like that. That's the nature of the snake bite. This is all part of the, this is all part of the regularities of nature. Everything in nature has its attributes, and if I neglect those and I act blindly, I'm going to suffer from that. So that's the second factor Vallada brings in to account for suffering. And then he also mentions Maya. Now, Maya actually has been mistranslated in Saiva Siddhanta, which is the sense in which Vallada uses. Maya is primordial matter. It's the stuff of which the universe is made. The basic stuff, what you call matter. I mean, I know now, you know, matter has been reduced to energy and all that stuff. But whatever it is of which things are made, whatever has generated this universe, that is Maya. It's not illusion. It's primal, the original stuff from which the universe developed, you know. And Vallada says that this stuff has some very peculiar attributes. I was talking about Sat Chit and Ananda, which in Vallalar is Sat Chit and Inbam. And in the context of Vallalar's statement that Yirka Inba Nerivagi Ongya Sivananda Urmai Tirunada Seige, Yella Virgalam in Mamadar Purutte, Tirula Karunayar Seidar Ligindra Sarva Ulabaragya Tanitalamai Karavule. That is the inherent bliss, absolute bliss of Arat Paranjori, is expressing itself in terms of all of these things that are going on in the universe, which are directed, and it's still unfolding, you know. We haven't reached the final stage yet. We are far from it. It's all directed towards producing conditions in which these beings, individual beings, individual souls, like human beings, can attain bliss. And I said the objection there has to be on pertaining to suffering. Why is there suffering? And as I said, that's a topic to be explored over a few sessions. But there are three factors that Vallalar refers to explain why there is suffering. So you have undeserved, unexpected, what is called accidental, quote-unquote, suffering. Serious, great suffering. That comes as a result of vinaya or karma. But it doesn't just simply fall on our laps out of the blue. You know, it still happens in terms of cause and effect. You know, certain conditions produce effects and then they lead to other conditions which produce other effects and so forth. But vinaya is not the only factor. There is also ajakrade or negligence. That's why Vallalar, I pointed out in my first post on Vallalar's letters, always, most of his letters, he's emphasizing the need for vigilance. Sometimes, you know, we have this fashionable word for it, mindfulness or attentiveness. That's a strong emphasis, especially the Buddhist groups and circles are talking about it day and night, mindfulness. That's what Vallalar means by jagrati, vigilance, you know, in how you conduct your daily life. Because there are different kinds of obstacles and dangers that can come from you from an unexpected direction or source. Therefore, you have to be you have to exercise chakrade or vigilance. And then I was saying Vallalar also points to Maya's Vigarpa Jalangal. That is something about the nature of matter itself, the ultimate stuff, with its unpredictability and imperfection and so forth, that produces dissolution, like, you know, our bodies dissolve. You know, teeth eventually fall off and so forth. It's decay. That's part of this asuttamayi, you know, the stuff from which the impure stuff, the impure elements, the impure atoms and so forth, asutta prakriti anukal, as Vallalar refers to them. They are called impure because they are subject to decay and destruction. And this is contrasted with suttamayi, pure. There is an order of pure elements, pure atoms and so forth, and bodies made of those pure atoms and pure elements and pure constituents are not subject to decay. And this also ties in with Vallalar's concept of Suddhadegam. In any case, when we are confused by suffering, we have to remind ourselves what is contributing to the suffering. It can be one or more of the three factors: karma, negligence, and just the qualities of nature that you find around you. So, I mean, everything, you know, even Mount Everest wears away eventually. I mean, the sun is eventually going to die and so forth. That's just the nature of this stuff from which the universe originated. So what, again, is remarkable is that despite these things, out of the great compassion of Arul Perumjodhi, good is still being achieved and realized. Well, what is the evidence for that? Well, let's take the evolution of life itself. It's a miracle that life has not only evolved, not only appeared, but also evolved and persisted. The Earth was hit by a body the size of Mars, and that's how the Moon came into existence. Okay? And when you look at the universe in terms of the scientific information, it's really a miracle that the Earth and all the life forms in it are still existing. Of course, there have been periodic destructions, which again should not surprise or confuse the student of Siddha Sanmargam, because Vallalar does refer to Aithal Thalaival. Aithal Say Thalaivarum Avarandangalayum Arukaramita Arukpurunjodhi. So there are, in Vallalar's realization, there are these, I don't want to call them supernatural, but they belong to a different order of nature. And there are intelligences that wield this power of destruction and exercise it. Therefore, you have that asteroid strike, 60 million years ago or something like that, which wiped out the dinosaurs. But then it wiped out the dinosaurs and many forms of life, but without that strike, the mammals couldn't have had a chance to evolve, and we wouldn't be here if the mammals didn't evolve. So ultimately, that strike, tremendously destructive as it was, paved the way for us. So we have to accept that destruction. Aithal is one of the functions exercised in the universe. This is not a school for kids where, you know, you're just giving candy and you're saying nice things and patting them in the back all the time. You know, this universe contains, is a place where great acts of destruction take place. So we have to keep that in mind. But we have to see, we have to understand, in light of all Vallalar says, this is all ultimately governed by divine law. So everything takes place in accordance with divine law, even destruction. So if we keep that in mind, then we're not going to get perplexed by destruction. It's just a fact of nature. And as Vallalar sometimes says, it's a way of, it's turusiniko. Destruction can be a way of getting rid of imperfections. Okay? And that's something to, again, study carefully. We've already seen that asteroid strike was a way to wipe out the dinosaurs. who could not have developed karuna, not to mention jiva karunyam. There is no jiva karunyam in the dinosaurs. They're just going around terrorizing and chewing other living beings. And that has to be wiped out in order to pave the way for beings that can progressively express compassion. So that takes us to us. And Valalar does not mean that animals do not have a claim to well-being. Far from it. He says, in fact, with respect to life and with respect to pain or suffering, animals have equal claim with human beings. But he is very clear that the human body is a remarkable body. It's superior to all other bodies because this human body has this faculty of reasoning, ararivu. Not only that, that helps, that faculty actually helps us to understand things like the Agaval and so forth and progress towards realization of Arupurinjodi. Insofar as the human body enables all of these things, again, science. Chimpanzees don't have science. Chimpanzees don't have art. I mean, if you find some art in birds and so forth, they can decorate their nests with flowers and all that. There is some rudimentary faculty of art, but nothing compared to what human beings have. Which, again, is not to say that we are the center of the universe and, you know, we can completely dominate and destroy other things. It's just to show how precious, how remarkable and how precious the human body is. So that means, as Valalar also has emphasized, we shouldn't waste this precious opportunity of human birth. We should use it to develop these powers or talents and focus on the supreme goal. So in any case, I've been talking about other terms that Valalar uses, starting with line 875 and going up to the lines 1555. The Sat-Chit and Inbam are very, very important lines. They actually go to the heart of the matter of the nature of Arupurinjodi. The nature of Arupurinjodi is kind of crystallized in these verses on Sat, Chit, and Inbam. But he also goes on to use other metaphors, and then I'm going to stop briefly now in a few minutes so people want or ask questions can do that. So, Amudu, nectar, ambrosia, he uses that to refer to Arupurinjodi. Then he uses money or gem, mandiram or mantra, marundu or medicine. He uses pun or gold. He uses nidhi or treasure. And then he uses a lot of things derived from nature like malai, kadal, karai or shore, kave, that is garden, poondarame, lotus tank, kulirtaru nirale. Melia kulirtharu nearly means shade, that cooling shade that provides some cool, you know, refuge from heat, which is the heat of, you know, worldly existence. Melia katre, breeze. Karunai nannire, you know, water that's healing, healing water. Then he gets into things that pertain to taste. Human taste, you know, when we talk about taste, of course, we think of food. And Valalar refers to Arupurinjodi as insuvai unavu, delicious food. Sevvila nire, you know, water, coconut water. Thirugu thimpale, you know, milk that has been, how shall I put it, you know, boiled to perfection, as it were, so it really tastes good. Nelli and Kaniye, Mensuai Suaye, and so forth, Sulaye, Kadaliwan Parame, Ilanda and Kaniye, Pudumayam Palame, Tinjuai. Tinjuai here means Titikum Suaye, sweet taste, delicious, you know, taste, and so forth. Suaye he uses a few times, then Sakare Tiral, Karkande, Tene, Narave, good meaning intoxicant or honey. Tu yatim padame, pasunarum pale, ilam pasuneye. You see, so all of these things center on food and taste. Hello?
Yes, doctor, please continue.
Yes, and I want to make a suggestion. Again, this is worth exploring, and I'm sure many of you would do this. I think there is actually a recommendation here in Vallalar talking about all these fruits and so forth. These, remember, this is all taking place in the context of the Agavu. So my own view is that these are things to examine for formulating our own diet. The fruits that he mentions, you know, if you look at, for instance, coconut water, and he also mentions coconut milk. Very well documented what the benefits are, health benefits are, of both Ilanir and the coconut milk, which is, of course, used, you know, a lot in Thai cuisine and so forth. Helps a lot with digestion and so forth. The Ilanir, the coconut water, has some very beneficial effects on the kidneys. So this is something we want to take note of. What are these fruits that he mentions? What are the combinations? He says in one verse that if you combine all of these fruits and you create this really, really delicious, dish, Arut Purunjodhi, the sweetness of Arut Purunjodhi far exceeds even this kind of sweetness and so forth. So what are these things he's talking about? And what are their health benefits? And then we can include them in our diet. Then he mentions sakkarai thirale. He refers to Arut Purunjodhi as this sugar, okay? And karkandu, candy, sugar candy. And then in honey, we already know honey, what are its health benefits. Now, with regard to sugar, there are some notes which I think have been misunderstood. What Vallalar means, I think, is that you have to pay attention to sugar intake. So your sugar intake should not be too much or it should not be too less. Of course, then you have, you know, in the case of low sugar, you need sugar because the brain needs sugar. You see, brain needs glucose sugar. So, but then if you take too much, it's going to result in diabetes and all that kind of stuff. And it will create serious health problems. But if you're suffering from a lack of sufficient sugar, that also can create problems. So Vallalar is not prescribing that we have to load ourselves with sugar. That's how he's been misinterpreted in some writings that I've seen. What he is saying is pay attention to sugar intake and regulate and moderate it. So then, you know, milk, pasanarambae, then ghee and so forth. And then so that takes care of the part where he is using all these things related to taste and enjoyment. Back again to Kalipu. Sutta Sanmargam is not a path of, you know, fasting yourself to death and cutting your tongue out and all that kind of stuff. Although Vallalar himself was very austere, the very fact that he celebrates all these fruits and sweets and so forth shows us that there is no prohibition on these things. Of course, it's subject to that discipline, Indriya Varukam, Suvai Virumbadirtho. Yeah, you have to conquer your addiction to taste, your dependence on taste. But that doesn't mean you're going to simply turn away from all enjoyment of good, nutritious food. That is food that does not violate the principles of compassion. You know, sweets and so forth, you know, you're not killing animals. And especially the kinds of things that he refers to here. Karumbu and so forth, karumbu saru and then param and so forth. They should be taken and enjoyed. And also used, of course, for health benefits. You know, fruits provide enzymes and so forth. So there's a lot there, I think. Again, back to this thing that I was saying in the beginning. I can't find anything to compare with the Agarwal, the range of it. I mean, which, you know, I can't think off the top of my head. I can't think of any kind of religious work, scripture, whatever, where the ultimate reality is praised in terms of these metaphors pertaining to taste and food and so forth. You know, which all ties in with that imbam aspect. It's all a manifestation of the Sanskrit word is ananda or bliss. Tamil word is imbam. So Sutta Sanmargam is a path that is directed towards this absolute bliss, imbam. This is not a path where you're going to be whipping yourself and torturing yourself and, you know, wallowing in pain and suffering. That's not what this path is about. It's a path of bliss. So you enjoy whatever you can enjoy as long as it doesn't violate compassion. But of course, you're also going to achieve mastery. So if I don't have Yalanir, I'm not going to act like that's the end of the world. You see, I must have that detachment. Not to be dependent on it, but if I have the opportunity to taste and enjoy a good Elanir, it's perfectly part of the path of Siddhasanmargam to enjoy it, but keeping in mind that this is also a manifestation of Arut Puranjori. That's why he refers to Arut Puranjori as Sevvilanire in line 1401. Sevvilanire, you know. Mensuve Sulaye, Kadaliwan Parame. Plantains and so forth. Ilandai and Kaniye. Ilandai, you have to examine the health benefits. There's considerable health benefits. Okay, then we see that he also refers to Arut Puranjori as flower, malar, and fragrance, nan maname. Then the musical metaphors, isai. And he refers to four forms of isai here, which are really interesting. 1423, yar and so forth. Let me just look that up here. Yes. Yarurum isaye, the isaye that comes from yar, an ancient Tamil instrument, stringed instrument. Inia in isaye, harmonious music. Yerurum isaye, these are the seven notes, the music of the seven notes. Iel arul isaye. Also this melody of grace. So, and then song. He refers to Arut Puranjori as Pattin. Nada nal varaipin nanniya paate, Veda geethathil vilaithuru paate. Veda geethathil vilaithuru paate is referring to, of course, Samaveda, you know, which is basically song. He must have heard, I suppose, the Brahmins chanting Samaveda and so forth. Then Nanmargar Naval Navitriya Pate, Tanmarga Sangam Tarviya Pate. So Arut Puranjori is also melody. Yes, hello.
Yes, doctor, please go ahead.
Yes, song and melody, right? This is all a celebration of music. This is, goes back to Kalayarivat, Kalipinil Viralam, Arulinil Kerutum Arut Puranjori, or something to that effect. I'm just, you know, my memory is not that good. This is all celebrating art. Which work, which religious work, well, I'm sure you can find some songs by mystics and so forth, but it's not often that you find the ultimate reality, God, whatever you want to call it, described as song, described in terms of the metaphor of song and melody and so forth. Then, of course, Sugam also plays a very important role, and this again should correct misconceptions about Suttasanmargam. And I don't want to dwell too much on this. I may have mentioned this to Prasanna and Karthik. So we have these this verse. Tivaloli Paruvam Sernda Nallavale Avalodum Kudi Arindado Sugame, 1425 and 1426. Now, Tivaloli Paruvam is a maiden in the fullness of her beauty and brilliance. And Avalodum Kudi Arindado Sugame is referring to sexual happiness, which comes from consorting with women of this sort. And then again, I suppose you could also apply it to man or something like that, you know, somebody in his youth or whatever. This kind of joy is also a manifestation of divine bliss. It's a lower form of bliss, but notice Vallalar actually refers to Arut Puranjori as Arendador Sugame. This is the bliss of Arut Puranjori, the inbam of Arut Puranjori is also manifested, is also present in these kinds of, you know, phenomena, sexual and so forth. So we have to keep that in mind and not turn this into some kind of, you know, I don't know how to put it, holy business. You know, the holy business, everybody's walking around, very serious face, long face, no smiles, and everybody probably is thinking that they're all, you know, like top-notch saints or something like that. No, Sutta Sanmargam is not a path of asceticism. Whatever Vallalar actually, was able to do was at his level of attainment and realization, but he never prescribed to everybody that, for instance, Thoruvur Velayudha Mudaliyar says that Vallalar hardly ate, but he was continuously active. And sometimes he just had a small bowl of rice, and most of the time he subsisted on hot water with some sugar mixed in it, which is glucose, of course. But Vallalar does not prescribe that for everybody. This was because of the extraordinary achievement and changes that were taking place in his body. But that doesn't mean that if you are on the path of Sutta Sanmargam, you are required to subsist on hot water with some sugar mixed in it. Not at all. That was the case. He wouldn't have all these verses celebrating various kinds of fruits and food. And now it's the same thing with sexuality also. Sutta Sanmargam does not exclude it. But again, going back to the Vurukkams, it's all part of a certain discipline, you know. You have to avoid excess, but you also have to avoid the suffering of deprivation. And when you are in the initial stages of the path, maybe middle stages of the path, you exercise moderation. You don't go towards the extreme of addiction or obsession and all that kind of stuff, which we can see taking place in India and also, of course, in the United States and so forth. There's a kind of obsession with sex and all that, which is contrary to the principles of Sutta Sanmargam. But from that, we should not conclude that it's anti-sexuality or anything like that. It has its proper place, the whatever inbam you may get from sex and all that is a kind of manifestation of Aruppurunjothi's inbam. Otherwise, Vallalar wouldn't say, Thivaloli Parvam Sendha Nallavale Avalodum Puri Arendhudho Sugame. So keep these things in mind so that we don't present Sutta Sanmargam as some kind of gloom and doom religion, you know. It has nothing to do with that. This is a path where science is embraced, where art is embraced. It's a path of joy. It's a path of happiness. And our compassion comes as a result. There's a close relationship between the compassion, the Anmaneya Urumipadu, and Sugam and Inbam and all that. They're all related. The compassion and all that spring from that. Because we get progressively happy in this path, dwelling on Aruppurunjothi and the supreme attributes of Aruppurunjothi, we share that joy in terms of compassion and all that, you know. So we're not inwardly miserable and cursing and saying to people, you're going to go to hell and you're going to be punished for this and you're going to be punished for that and this is karma and that is karma and so forth. We're not doing that. That's all completely contrary to the attitudes that Vallalar prescribes. And look at his letters. You look at his letters, we can understand something of the kind of attitudes he had even from his early years. So I'm going to pause here. I know I've been talking too much. And I apologize, but there have been so many aspects that I've been thinking about. I just wanted to put them out there so that people can pursue them. So I'm going to pause here and take any comments or questions and then wrap it up.
Yeah, this is Karthik.
Yes.
Yeah. This is a request, it's not any clarification. We should explore the possibilities and avenues so that in a global platform like religious peace conference, so that the doctor can represent there and then deliver a speech about the Sutta Sanmargam, so that it will come to the limelight of the whole world and then other people also get benefit out of it. We have to explore that type of global platform wherein you can represent.
Thank you. I appreciate it. My goal right now is to, and I was in fact offering a prayer to Vallalar early this morning, just to understand the greatness of his teachings to the extent I can with my small mind, and then to express it to the extent I can correctly in English, and then put it out there. But my main goal is actually to realize Arut Perinjodhi. So that is my main goal. And that's why, as I've said, I mean, that's the whole point of Vallalar's, you know, Vallalar's message. Well, he says that right at the beginning of Jivakarnya Vurakam, and he's also said it many times in the petitions. This is the goal, and, you know, that's my goal too. And everything else that I do is, you know, based on whether it is going to help me to reach the goal or not. So right now, yes, I need to clarify the teachings in my mind and express it to the extent I can correctly in English. But I want to say I really appreciate your suggestion and your consistent engagement. I really appreciate it. Very kind. But my goal is not to become like one of these, like a Vivekananda or something going around giving lectures and so forth. My goal is to actually realize all that Vallalar has written about, which is exactly what he intended us to do, is to use everything that he has written as a platform, as a stepping board to realize Arut Perinjodhi. So that's my response to what you've said. But I certainly will continue to do this work of translating and commenting. So again, appreciate your suggestion and encouragement.
Doctor, I have a question. So you mentioned that in Agaval, Vallalar gives, you know, what kind of foods can be taken, like, and also sugar and so on. So I could also see Vallalar mentions about honey, right? So the way in which honey is actually taken, or, you know, honey itself, vegans are not plant food. That's you know, we are more like stealing the honeybees' food, right? So I'm just wondering, you know, how could Vallalar think that we can take honey? Any comment?
But actually, you're not destroying the beehive. Well, I mean, you're not destroying the bees. You're taking the hive, and they build again. They build again, and they you know, they subsist on things that are from flowers and so forth. So, you know, obviously we're not endangering the bees by taking the hive. If we were doing that, then all the bees would die when you take the hive. No, they just move on. They go somewhere else and they build other hives. So, the extraction of honey. And again, there are different kinds of bees and different kinds of forms of honey and so forth. It does not result in the destruction of the bees. So it's not contrary to Jivakaranyam. That's what I feel. That's what I think. You know, so I have to thank you for bringing that up. It's certainly a good question. How is the use of honey? I think your question is, how is the use of honey? And Vallalar has celebrated Thane. How is the use of honey? Well, you know, we can say that Vallalar actually doesn't say you have to take Thane, but it's clear he celebrates Thane and its taste. There will be no point in doing that if we are not permitted to taste Thane. But I think this is my response, and I will investigate this further. It only removes the honey from the honeycomb. Well, the honey is stored, of course, by the bees. But even if you take the honeycomb and then you, of course, extract the honey, you're not destroying the bees. So it's a product. It's a product of the bees. And the bees still can sustain themselves and survive on, you know, what's available again in flowers and so on and so forth. So I don't see that as inconsistent with Jivakaranyam. If you kill the bees, then nobody does it. You know, no person interested in extracting honey is really interested in killing the bees. They just protect themselves when they go and get the honeycomb and so forth. So I don't see that as inconsistent with Jivakaranyam.
Okay. Maybe I think we can do one more query about this in detail. I do have more points to discuss about it, but considering the time, we can move on to the other questions.
Okay.
Doctor, this is Raji from Philadelphia.
Yeah, hi, Raji.
Hi. Ego already mentioned about that lifelong learning, this is the poetry. So even though in the busy schedule, how do you plan your time, everyday schedule, about learning about this kind of poetry like that?
Well, you know, yeah, I think that, okay, sorry, were you going to say something else?
No, no. How do you manage our screen?
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, people, this is where, you know, you have various hints from Vallalara also, you know, how the regulation of daily life, you know, Vallalara has, you know, there are hints or suggestions from Vallalara about how to regulate the daily life, as you know, you know, up in the morning and going through the things. He prescribes exercise also. Prescribes rest and regulation of sleep and all that. You probably know about that already. Yeah. Those things can be used, but also when you read others, you know, like Swami Sivananda, Hrishikesh, and so forth, you can always get some hints. I think that for Siddha Sanmargam, the doing some kind of work, you know, to help other people is essential, you know, whether you're volunteering in a soup kitchen or something like that, weekends, a couple of hours, whatever, that's really important. Or you're making some contributions to charity to the extent you can. Those things are there. And then, you know, whenever you can help somebody, you can help, you know, somebody, maybe some really homeless person, wants food and you can buy food and give it to them. You know, I always do that. If they say, I'm hungry, I need money, I say, you want something to eat, then I'll give you, I just get something, you know, like a sandwich or something, and I give them to them. I don't give them money because sometimes there are people that use it for drugs or whatever. So yeah. I just give food, you know. So you can do that, but in terms of practice, I think just reflecting on the verses in the Agavul, it's a very useful practice at different times of the day. For instance, just give an example, if it's raining, you can use the verses which describe Arupar and Jyothi as Mari, you know. As Mari, you know. So that's in starting in 15, line 1520. Where is it? It's in my edition here. Yes, you know, I mean, when it's raining, to say, Uyangiya ullamum uyurum thayittida vayangiya karuni maripuri maraye. Yenneyum mani kondennulle niramba manniya karuni maripuri maraye, and so forth. You know, these are things we can do. And as I said, even there are lines that can help you if you have low spirits and all that, you know. So forth. You see something beautiful, you can always recite Kalayarivalitthu Kalippinil Uyiralla Malayvara Kaathirul Arupar Jyothi, you know. Kalayarivu is a sense of beauty, you know. We have a sense of beauty that we've been endowed with, a sense of beauty by Arupar Jyothi. In order to enjoy and experience the beauty in the world. So, you know. So I don't know if that answer provides some indication.
Yeah. It's really wonderful explanation, Doctor. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the question, actually. It's a point that I have to think about. And Jyothi Vayupada, as you know, I mean, that's what we do. But the Jyothi Vayupada, it doesn't have to be confined just to those times when you contemplate the light. When you step out, you see sunlight, you know. I sometimes do that sunrise when I see sunrise. Surya Chandira Jyothi Jyothi Indra Aryar Pugartharum Arupar Jyothi. When you see moonrise, you can go over this verse. Surya Chandira Jyothi Jyothi Indra Aryar Pugartharum Arupar Jyothi. You know. And when you do that, it somehow increases your appreciation also in some way, depending on how concentrated you are when you say the verse. So these are things we can do. So that's what I meant in the beginning. You have to immerse yourself in the spirit of the Agavul. That is part of the practice of Siddha Sanmargam. Okay, I think somebody else wants to ask a question.
Sir, this is Vivek, and I'm from Chennai.
How are you?
So I'm good, sir. I just want to have a quick query, like, how can we remove a fat from coconut milk?
How can you remove fat from coconut milk? I don't know.
How can
you
remove?
Yeah. Well, you can boil it. I'm not an expert on coconut milk, but if your underlying question is, it would have fat, and can that fat not be a factor when it comes to health? You're making a very good point, but I'm sure there's ways in which you can burn the fat, or you just have to reduce the intake too, you know. Because all of these things have to be taken in the quantity at which they are good for the health. Anything in excess quantity is going to turn bad, like sugar, you know. Valala praises Arut Paranjothi in terms of sugar and candy and so forth. So this doesn't mean that I'm going to have to keep eating sugar and candy 24/7, you know. Obviously not. So, same thing with coconut milk. If you think that there's fat in it, well, make the coconut milk, I suppose, would be used in, you know, certain kinds of preparations. You know, like Thai cuisine, they use a lot of coconut milk. But it's not consumed. I hope you haven't misunderstood it as a prescription to drink coconut milk in the way we drink the ordinary milk. No, that's not the prescription. The prescription is simply that you can use coconut milk because Vallalar has mentioned it in the Agavul. So I would say that my presumption, and I'm open to correction, but my presumption is that if Vallalar has mentioned it, there must be some significant health benefits to it. So that's my presumption. But this doesn't mean that you can take it in unlimited quantity or anything like that. You know, sometimes even with milk, as he says, padapada kaichya, pasunarumpale and so forth, you have to boil it, homogenized milk and so forth. Those things go without saying. So in any case, my answer is I don't really know if there's a lot of fat in coconut milk. Thank you for bringing up that question. But if there is, I'm sure there are many ways in which we can take care of it.
Doctor, I think Vivek thanked you. I'm not sure if you heard it.
Yeah, I got it, sir. Thank you for your answer.
No, actually, Vivek, the point that you brought up is good, because as in the case of sugar, excessive coconut has saturated fat. It has high levels of saturated fat. But it does have health benefits too. That's well documented. It's a rich source of manganese, for instance. And it also provides phosphorus, iron, and magnesium. But, it also has oil, which has some health benefits, but you don't want to take it in high levels, because then there's saturated fat. And then that can contribute to raising blood levels of cholesterol. So, again, you know, same thing. You know, they have health benefits, but then you have to know how much to take and in what form.
Yeah, actually, I heard that the more number of intake of coconut milk will also increase the formation of latex. So, is that true?
I couldn't hear what you said, but I would just say that it's not where the point is not that now start drinking coconut milk, consume gallons of coconut milk. It's just that if it has been mentioned by Vallalar, it must have some health benefits. And, of course, we have to see within what range of consumption those health benefits will manifest. And everything, of course, is going to have some harmful effect if you overconsume it or you don't consume it in certain forms. So, you know, that goes without saying. So, yes, coconut does have saturated fat, and therefore we have to reduce its consumption.
Hello, doctor.
Yes, hello.
Hello, doctor. Hello, Dr. Yes. Ravindran speaking from Nagapattinam, Tamil Nadu.
Okay, hello.
India.
Yes.
Hello. Your speech was very, very exceptional. And you have got a thorough study of this Vallalar work. And you are able to present it in such a way that overall 100% review of the Arutpa was we are able to join. You are specifically mentioning about because it is absolutely necessary for the humankind. I'm sorry that some of our friends are degressing your subject and on honey and the coconut milk. But anyway, no problem. But this Armanaya Urmaipadu is our most important aspect of Samarasa Siddha Sanmargam, which was comprehended by many great men like Benjamin Franklin and Rabindranath Tagore and all. They all felt that people should rise above language, religion, nationality, caste and creed, etc. So this was the same thing was emphasized by Vallalar in a very elaborate way, which you are able to present everything out from this. But one thing I want to mention here, Dr. Sir, is about there is one chapter called Arul Vilakka Molai in the Arutpa, which has 100 poems. In that, it is very clearly Vallalar says how God can be realized, how God will come to our rescue, how this our maya and all will not work with Samarasa Sanmargi who follow this Vallalar's preaching. This maya and all will not work because Arupperumjoy Andavar will come to the rescue of this people and safeguard them in all walks of life. In every second, he comes for the rescue of the followers willingly, with joy, in a swift way, and that he does that and safeguards the followers. One of the followers who was saved by Arupperumjoy Andavar was me, myself. Okay, several times he saved my life. It's a real fact that God is with you, or Sanmargi is always ever present with them and to safeguard them. This is the great joy when you are with following Vallala. This is what explained by you in detail. It's wonderful preaching, sir. He gives a gist of Vallala's efforts to pass on to the humankind. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your appreciation. But I don't think I fully deserve it. As I've been saying, I'm just a student and I feel I'm scratching the surface. But I appreciate your compliments. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I'm hearing, Doctor.
I just want to make a point. You know, Vallalar has always emphasizes the need to take care of the body, you know, knowing that it's just the body, yeah. You know, instrument, you know, we don't identify ourselves with the body and think we are the body, but we take care of the body because it's needed for mutti, you know. So mutti arayavadarku, for that we need the degam. So the paying attention to food and all that is an important part of Siddha Sanmargam. I wouldn't say that it should be neglected, which I'm sure you agree with that. In any case, you mentioned Benjamin Franklin. Rabindranath Tagore certainly tried to promote the ideal of human unity, you know, Armanaya Urmaipadu and all that. Although in the case of Vallalar, it's not just human beings. It's also Orariulla Jeevargal, plants and trees. And then Vaila Jeevargal, animals, you see. So Armanaya Urmaipadu embraces all of these non-human forms of life too in Vallalar. And he formulated this in 19th century, which makes him very remarkable. But the Benjamin Franklin, he had his, he made his great contributions and so forth to the founding of this, of the United States. But he was not, I wouldn't say he realized the spirit of Armanaya Urmaipadu or unity, human unity. He was in fact quite racist. For example, he didn't think that the Swedes and Germans who were immigrating to the United States that time, during his time, should be allowed to do so. And he, in fact, had this notion of Anglo-Saxon superiority. That is the notion that, you know, the pure whites are the people of English stock, and only they are entitled to, you know, colonize this country, this land, which what they did at the expense of Native Americans. So he was not anywhere near Vallalar's ideal of human unity, although I
right,
think...
Right, right there. Excuse me, but I am coming only to his views on the religion. He says religions have no tendency to, conform the morality in the men. They don't instigate or conform the morality in the men. On the other hand, they divide people and make them to act against each other. So he was deadly against this religious custom. That point only I am taking that my view. Similarly, Tagore was advising Gandhi, why you are fighting for the Indian? Why you are not fighting for the man in the other parts of the world also? They are also under colonialism and they are suffering. Why you are always talking about India and boundaries of India? It's not like that. So you should work for the people of the world. That was Tagore's vision on this fighting for freedom. So they are against this religion and colonialism and all. This is what I just wanted to take out of Benjamin's advices. One more thing, this Vallalar, you gave a hint about this concentrating the mind, that is nothing but meditation. Vallalar is very particular about that. So one should realize God in thyself. God lives in your heart with you, so you should realize that. That is what he calls Sitsabai. Sitsabai is a miniature form of God's presence in thyself. So you want to do that dhyana and improve that your contact with the divinity. That is what he insisted. That point also you can give some more importance in your discourse, sir. That will be very nice and useful for that.
Thank you. With Benjamin Franklin, again, we have to... he was actually a Freemason. He belonged to a particular religious group. I'm not very familiar with his views on... If what you're saying is true, yes, certainly we can consider that. But I just want to point out to you that his record as far as some of these immigrant groups are concerned, is far from admirable. He was saying that, the Germans and the Swedes are darker in complexion. They're not really pure white, and only the pure whites, the Anglo-Saxon stock, deserve to settle this continent and so forth. So there are some of those kinds of views, too. I just want to point that out because we have to correctly understand both the good and bad, of course, and keep in mind the fact that this ideal of Anmaneya Urmaipada is a very high ideal, and it's not easy to fulfill it. And therefore, before we say that somebody actually attained it or, expressed it fully, we have to make sure that we are familiar with the kinds of views expressed by that person. So, again, what I'm saying is to actually draw a favorable contrast in favor of Vallalar. Vallalar didn't have any of the advantages that Benjamin Franklin had. Wealth and access to power and privilege and all that. But even though he lived in an obscure village in Tamil Nadu, Vallalar's mind and his perspective far, far, far wider and broader and deeper than Benjamin Franklin. Or anybody, any other contemporaries. Even Gandhi was not able to free himself completely from the caste system. He wanted, of course, to put an end to the oppression of the untouchables and so forth, but he was in favor of the caste system. He was against caste discrimination. He was against caste discrimination, but he thought caste still had a useful function. Vallalar went way beyond Gandhi, well in advance of Gandhi's time, when Vallalar clearly said, Sadiyam Samayam Madamum Poi, in Adil Unathya Arutthi. Caste system is false because, you know, as you know, it comes from the Purusha Sukta in the Vedas, where it says the Brahmins emerge from the head and the Kshatriyas from the shoulder and the Vaishyas the stomach and the Shudras from the feet.
All bullshit.
Well, you know, that was then turned into this kind of system where everybody had to keep to their place and so forth. And Vallalar actually, you know, rejects that. Not only rejected that, and also the ashrama system. You know, the division into Brahmachari and a householder and sannyas and all this. So that's why you don't have any sannyas. Vallalar never described him as described himself as a sannyasi. He mentioned sadhu, sadhukal, Sutta Samhara sadhukal, but they are just practitioners, you know. They're not sannyasi. So yeah, so sannyasi also, sannyasa and all that also does not, you know, is not acceptable. And I think the point Vallalar is making is that these kinds of divisions and all the elaborate rules that were cooked up to maintain these things only produce, as you point out, more divisions. You know, they don't, they are not conducive to producing unity. They, in fact, separate and divide people and make people to discriminate and so forth. So you're right about that. But I would say that, again, my point is, I mean, I don't want to say that Vallalar, you know, I mean, I don't want to come across as doing some kind of hero worship here, but one has to really appreciate the greatness of Vallalar and, you know, be careful in terms of comparisons, you know, especially given some of the statements, especially in the case of Benjamin Franklin about other groups of people and so forth. So that's all I would say. But thank you, thank you. Your point is well taken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, for your information, doctor, I am telling you, hello.
Yes.
I am 70 years old. I am 70 years old. I am a follower of Vallalar. And in my whole life, I never used the caste and the religion, all those things. Horoscope, everything. I never used in my life. This is for your information and for the information of other followers too. You can just neglect them and get rid of them. That's my humble request to you, sir.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, there again, your voice sounds young. I thought you were probably in your 30s, but you say you're 70.
So
I think your degam, you've been maintaining with Thidam, I suppose, following Sudarshan Margam, because your voice sounds a little young. In any case, with regard to astrology and all that, certainly, yeah, well, no, you know, we don't want to follow any kind of thing which would prevent us from Anmane Urume Padu and Jeeva Karunya Urukam. But it's not, Vallalar himself mentions Sodidam, and in fact, even in some of the songs, there are some references. I don't think we have to dismiss all of that. There may be elements to it which may be helpful in some way. What I mean is, if, for instance, things like astrology, and I've mentioned this to Prasanna and Karthik, in fact, the Vallalar, I can't elaborate on that right now, I will do so at the appropriate time. There is a system there, something there in Vallalar, some of the remarks he's made, which provide a basis for something like astrology. It can be used to become aware of what is happening at a particular time, what kind of tendencies, like this Muhurtam thing, you know, when you look at a certain time to see if it's suitable or not. As a kind of guideline, there is something in Vallalar, and as I said, I can't elaborate on it now. But you're certainly right. I mean, the traditional practice of Jyotidam, And then following it, and so if they look at, for instance, the girl's horoscope, and then they say, oh, this girl has the this Savai Dosham, you know, Savai Dosham, yes. And or, you know, yes. Marriage. Yes. And then they treat the girl cruelly. They treat her cruelly because yes. Her horoscope has Savai Dosham. I absolutely agree with you. Those kinds of things we don't, you know, we have to exclude from Sudarshan Margam.
Thank you.
Yeah, but we don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater. That's what I'm saying. Thank you.
Correct. Thank you, sir. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have any other questions or comments? Hello, does anyone have any other questions or we can close the call right now?
Okay. I have one question.
Yes, Stacey, go ahead.
Yeah, regarding one statement what Vallalar made, like, evvida thandirithal avadu nitrika nithrandu kolga, which does, that means, do we have any, bypass so that we can open up our pineal gland?
I couldn't catch. Sorry, can you repeat yourself? Evvida thandirathalavadu what?
Evvida thandirathalavadu nitrikkanai thurandhu kolga, which means, activating the pineal gland in some ways. Do we have any?
No, I don't know where you're. Sorry, go ahead.
Like, just a quick question, like, do we have any quick ways that we can activate our pineal gland, or it's just compassion alone can, guide the way to open up the
where
pineal
did
gland?
Where did you get that? What he says is in Jiva Karnya Varkam, he uses evvida thandirathalavadu, you have to prevent when kolai and pasi come to afflict a being. I remember that, him saying that in the Jiva Karnya Varkam, but where did you get? Is this from one of the Upadesa Kurupagal?
Yes. I think, this was shared SMS from a Vallalar.
Oh, no, you have to be careful with the Upadesa Kurupagal contain all sorts of things attributed to Vallalar, and many of them are just plainly embarrassing. You know, Vallalar couldn't have said anything as absurd or confused as that, you know. So we have to be very careful and accept only the what's there in the Agaval, the Jivakanya Varkam, and the Vinnappangal, and then parts of the Per Upadesam that agree with the Vinappams and the Agaval and Jiva Karnya Varkam, and anything in the Thirumurais that agrees again with the Vinappam, Agaval and Jiva Karnya Varkam. So I don't think that Vallalar has anything like that. I don't think Vallalar would have said that with the Tandirathanal of the Purva. Well, first of all, if you're talking about the Karana Varkam, you see, I think you're talking about what Vallalar mentions in Karana Varkam, which, if I can find it here, he says that the preliminary stages you focus on the Purva Madhi, you see, which is the, actually that's the center, that's the Chitsabha, that's the hall of consciousness. And when you meditate also, you can see as your meditation progresses, a kind of space in the forehead area. And, people have talked about it in terms of third eye and all that kind of thing. You begin to have a kind of inner eye in which you see things in this space. That's what Vallalar is talking about. But you have to focus again on Arut Paranjodhi, you know, the mantra, the great mantra of Sudarshan Margam, as you focus on the forehead center. In the Kundalini Yoga, it's called Agni Chakra. That's all there is to it. It's all about making a resolution in your mind, as Vallalar puts it in the Vinnappam. Ingum Puranaragi Ulangigindra Or Unmai Kadavul Undendrum. அக்கடவுளை உண்மை அன்பார் கருத்தில் கருதி வழிபாடு செய்யின் அக்கடவுள் திருவருள் நமது கருத்தின் கண் வெளிப்பட்டு விளங்கும். That's the essence of it. There is no you know, shortcut or some, you know, some formula you can use here. This is all part of cultivating devotion, cultivating meditation, cultivating jiva karanyam and so forth. And then eventually you make progress in perceiving the truth in the chitsabhi. But there will be other kinds of things. You know, this is where, you know, one has to be careful about Vallalar himself says somewhere, he says, the yoga mala is not necessary if you do that, and I think he may have in mind Kundalini yoga and all that. If you do that, you will see some velicham. And then if you see the velicham, he says something to the effect, you know, pallilith irumar paringa, you know, you'll get conceited, or you will think that it's something great because you saw some light, when it's actually a minor thing. So the main things in Saddhasan Margam are cultivating compassion, developing this Anmaneya Urumipadu. Most importantly is to be reinforcing the belief in Arutparanjyothi by regular contemplation, you know, of the verses in the Agaval and again meditation and so forth. So that's the way you go. There is no tantra or technique for instant enlightenment. Vallalar himself mentions Madhavam. If Vallalar has said that, Madhavam, he himself had to do Madhava Payan, you know, Perundaya Madhava Payan and so forth. Now, what is that Madhavam that Vallalar says he performed? It's simply the thing that he mentions to Irukkam Ratthina Mudaliyar. Jeeva Karunyam and Sivasindhanai. Idai Vidamal, he says. Idai Vidamal, without any break. That's the only thing. I don't know if I've addressed what you've raised.
Yes, doctor. And one more last question. Like, recently, the scientists like Michio Kaku have found the string theory. Does this pertain to what Vallalar said? Like, what actually lies deep beneath the, you know, the hall of consciousness? Is that what science is slowly, you know, coming up with, like string theory, something like that?
Well, as you know, and I'm just studying this topic too, string theory and all that, it's not settled. There are various debates about it. So we have to be careful of not doing something which, for instance, many people in the Hindu tradition have done. Which is, they will say that it was already there in the Vedas and so forth. You know, aeronautics was already there in the Vedas, calculus was already there in the Vedas, and then they actually make laughing stocks of themselves, because there is no evidence of calculus in the Vedas. There is no account of aeronautics in the Vedas. They speak about some flying, vehicles and so forth, but there is no description of aeronautics in the Vedas. Nor is there any indication of calculus. So we have to be careful about saying, what Vallalar was saying, this is exactly there in the science of today, because the science of today is often replaced by something else tomorrow. So if the string theory is replaced by something else, or they find that the string theory is not adequate because it cannot make predictions, that's one of the issues, as you may know. And then what are we going to say? Are we going to say now Vallalar is wrong now? No, well, Vallalar, first of all, is not talking about string theory. There's no reference to string theory. What Vallalar is talking about, of course, is a kind of deep structure and order in the universe. All of these different sections on the elements and so forth, as far as the terrestrial is concerned, it's earth, water, you know, fire, air, and sky. But as far as the universe is concerned, it is, matter, it's cosmic wind, you know, solar wind and that kind of stuff. Then there is, radiation, and space. He talks about how there is kind of order and structure in all of these things. And not only that, he in fact speaks of the presence of intelligence in all of these things, which we have not discovered, science has not discovered yet. You know, sati satar, Valiyanal Vyapurusati Satargal science has not discovered, because it goes to a much deeper level, which can only be discerned by, in the case of Vallalar, it was revealed to him by Aruparinjodi. So it's a different kind of knowledge that Vallalar is expressing. So we should always be careful. Yes, let us study string theory and whatever it tells us about the universe and how astonishing the universe is. Should enhance our appreciation of the wonders of Aruparinjodi's Arul, because it's all Arul Sakti, as you know. It's all, finally, what is the basic energy that is responsible for not only bringing the universe into existence, but keeping it going? It is Arul Sakti. But science is nowhere near grasping that. It's way above the level of science. But, whatever appreciation science can contribute, in terms of showing how the universe works, and then we can say, this is how Arul Sakti works. You know, Arul Sakti is responsible for all this, all these wonderful phenomena. That's fine. But again, we have to be careful about saying, is Vallalar already talked about string theory and so forth. We'll have to be careful about that.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr.
Okay.
Stacey, you had a question?
Oh, yes. Actually, it was more of a comment, and I wanted to thank Dr. Raghu again for such an informative time this morning. To the gentleman who was concerned about fat in coconut milk, what I do is I take a can of the milk, refrigerate it overnight, the fat rises to the top, and then you can remove it. So that's an easy way.
Yes, yes. Of course, I mean, the quantity is important. Just because it's good doesn't mean it should be taken in. It should be taken in moderation. But I found that the coconut milk is actually also it's nutritious for plants. So there's another benefit. Apparently, it supports plant growth. So makes it more interesting why Vallalar would mention it, because he was also very concerned about plant life, which is a great concern in our world today, with all the destruction of the forests and so forth. But thank you for sharing that. And I appreciate your compliment.
You're welcome.
Do you have any questions or any criticisms or any doubts, I think it's always good to kind of challenge, like Prasanna was doing with the honey and so forth, Are there any doubts that came into your mind on this preliminary exposition of Ramalingam's teachings?
I'm just so full right now of new information. I'm sure there will be doubts at some point, but I'm just absorbing it all.
Okay.
So, thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay. Then we'll come to the end of the session. Doctor, thank you so much for your time today. I think we have exceeded our planned budgeted time. But anyway, it is very informative, enlightening, and you gave us a complete summary of the understanding, overall understanding at a very high level, which is good. And as you said, it takes our entire life or more than that to completely understand Agarwal. But I think this is a great introduction for us on this week, when the Agarwal was written. So thank you so much, Doctor. Thanks for your time. We really appreciate, and we look forward in the coming weeks to hear from you.
Yes, I only covered up to about 48 of those terms that Vallalar uses to refer to Aruparinjodi, but as I said, there are 96 of them, so there's 48 left. But I just want to point out that then Vallalar goes back to the word Aruparinjodi. It comes back, I made some notes here, it comes back in 1556 or so, line 1556, then he reverts back to Arutkuranjodi, and then it ends by celebrating Arutkuranjodi. And again, you can see, and I want to draw this draw attention to this, those you know, who are familiar with Tamil, the first two weirdirthu or vowels, a and a, you can see again that in the very end also they play a role, you know. So consider that, you know. And then again, it's really astonishing how he's able to come up with the appropriate words. So you have arul amudu, arul arivu, then you have arul nilai, then you have algalin rongia, and so forth, artulin rongia, and so on. So a lot of that to, you know, contemplate and appreciate the extraordinary use of, or the extraordinary achievement in the use of the Tamil language. And how he has used Tamil to convey all these truths about the ultimate reality, you know. And shouldn't come as a surprise, because in one of the petitions, he says that Tamil is particularly suited for the expression of spiritual truths, particularly and the truths about great life without death. So that doesn't come as a surprise that he's able to use Tamil in this way. So I end on that note. I'm sorry if I've gone on and on. I've been kind of carried away by enthusiasm here, and I really appreciate this patient audience, and I appreciate all your comments and questions.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
And we will, so the next couple of few minutes, we will have the petition reading by Raji, and then we will end the session with Jyoti song. Raji Amma, can you please read the petition?
Yes, sure. Arupparan Jyoti, Arupparan Jyoti, Taniparan Karunai, Arupparan Jyoti. Uthiran Yana Chittipuram Alais of, and Uthiran Yana Chidambaram Alais of, and by the Thiruvarul, the names that are surrounded as things can do special names of, and the Parvathipuram Alais of Vadalur, and of the names that were given as nicknames to refer to of having those names pronounced as storing Godpadi in that the natural revealing of fullness is a pure Sivanubhava Jnanasubai, in that hearing the natural truth filled God form. The natural bliss filled Sivananda oneness, holy dance performing just for all the life forces to get the joy showered. Showered everything can do unique head of the God Arupparan Jyoti. O the God, O the Highness to your holy community, I am submitting my Samarasa Sutta Sanmarka Sangha Satya petition. In this world, six sense superlative body that I got of I am for this body, often and often is referred by such as deafness, disease, aging, fear, and the pain. And to cure all of this suffering, make this body itself to become a nitya body, so that in whichever time, in whatever places, in any manner and in any way, without any obstacles, I should be able to live by getting the blissful city. Great life is what the true strong and huge effort of my desire. In this effort of my desire, like all the sufferings be cured and the making this body itself a nitya body, so that forever undestroyable blissful great siddhi life could be attained. And what way it could be possible, like when I started thinking about that time, no other way one should be getting this. And all can do God's freedom. God's freedom is the only way, only one way one could achieve this. And I came to know as it was announced by Thiruvarul. After that, what way we could get God's freedom like? When I started thinking that time, mind and I of body freedom, bhoga freedom and jiva freedom. And all these three things should be eliminated in that time only, you get that. I came to know as it was announced by the Highness Thiruvarul. Hence, holding that are being my freedoms, such as body freedom, bhoga freedom, and jiva freedom, and all surrendered to this Highness Thiruvarul as his full freedom. Given of that time, this body, the jivan and bhoga things, and all are only given by the full freedom God of great mercy, and other than that, it's not of our freedom that we hold. So this truth I came to know as it was revealed by Thiruvarul. Hereinafter, from this body and from this jivan and from this bhoga thing, by the evidence of Thiruvarul, none of these freedoms would be appeared as my freedom. The Highness put forth the Thiruvarul freedom to me and blessed to cure the sufferings of this deathness, disease, aging, fear, and the pain, and making this body itself a Nitya body. And I should be able to live forever undestroyable and forever blissful great Siddhi life. Likewise, all the life forces who got this body should also be revealed by the way as it was revealed to me, and also make them a privileged people to get this and should be able to live like me. Your Highness, for your great graceful rule, welcome, welcome. Aruperanjodi, Aruperanjodi, Taniperankarnai, Aruperanjodi. Let all living beings live blissfully. Aruperanjodi, Taniperankarnai. Thanks a lot, Doctor.
Yes, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Rajiyamma, and
Jodi, 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 Suyam. Jodi, 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 Param. Jodi, 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 Arul. Jodi, 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 Sivam. Vama, Jodi, Soma, Jodi. Vana Jodi, Jnana Jodi, Maga Jodi, Yoga Jodi, Vada Jodi, Nada Jodi, Yema Jodi, Yoma Jodi, Yera Jodi, Vira Jodi, Yeka Jodi, Yeka Jodi, Yeka Jodi, Yeka Jodi, Adi Nidhi Vedane, Adal Nidhi Padane, Vadi Jnana Bodane, Valga 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 Nadane, Aruperanjodi, Aruperanjodi, Taniperankarnai, Aruperanjodi.
Thanks, Avi, for joining the today's discussion. Vali Eni Tuki Vaita Karadalangal, Vali Yella Vulla Manimandram, Vali Nadam, Vali Arujodi, Vali Nadarayan, Vali Sivanyana Vali, Vali Yen Andavan, Vali Yen Konarul, Vaime Yen Vali, எம்மான் புகழ் வாழி என் நாதன் மலர் பதங்கள் வாழி மெய் சுத்த சன்மார்க பெருநெறி மாண்பு கொண்டு வாழி இவ்வையமும் வானமும் மற்றமும் வாழியவே அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி தனிப்பெரும் கருணை அருட்பெரும் ஜோதி எல்லா உயிர்களும் இன்புற்று வாழ்க கொல்லாவிரதம் குவளையமெல்லாம் ஓங்குக வள்ளல் மலரடி வாழ்க வாழ்க சத்குருநாதா சத்குருநாதா சன்மார்க சங்கம் தழைக்க அருள் தாத்தா திருச்சி. Thanks. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for your time today.